Back in June on the program, we heard from author Gordon Young and his book about Flint called Tear Down, Memoir of a Vanishing City. Gordon Young is back in East Lansing today to do a brown bag presentation at the MSU Museum. About a month after Tear Down's release, the city of Detroit filed for bankruptcy. WKAR's Melissa Benmark caught up with Gordon Young yesterday to ask, how are the two cities' problems different?
One way in which they're different is that this is hard for outsiders to understand, but Detroit is dramatically more diversified economically than Flint is or ever was. So big cities like Detroit who face these problems, they're extremely daunting. But for mid-sized and smaller cities like Flint, when they lose 80,000 GM jobs, and then they lose all of the parts suppliers who were working for GM, they really don't have anything to fall back on. And Detroit, as bad as their economic situation is, they do have other assets, whereas a place like Flint has very few assets to fall back on. And it makes this problem much more extreme for a city like Flint as opposed to Detroit. And again, I'm not trying to downplay Detroit issues, because I know there's a lot of suffering there and the debt is astronomical. But at the same time, I think things are worse in Flint. The per capita crime rate in Flint is much higher than Detroit. The poverty levels on a per capita basis are much higher in Flint than Detroit. It's a much tougher hill to climb for a smaller or mid-sized city.
I grew up in Lansing here, and we always kind of fared better somehow than a lot of the towns that had auto plants, I think in part because of the diversification that we had, you know, the hospital system, the university, and that kind of thing. But even then, seeing some of the things that have kind of decayed here over the years, I can't imagine, you know, how painful it must be to watch your hometown going the way that Flint has been going. Did you find kind of almost a sense of powerlessness when you were writing the book?
When I first went back to Flint, I've been back a few times over the years since my family moved in 1986 and I went off to college. And when you first come back, I got this strange sort of simultaneous feeling. One is the second I'm back in Flint, I feel like I'm home. I know things have changed. A lot of the buildings are gone. A lot of the landmarks that I remember have changed or disappeared or burned out. But there's something about being back there that makes me feel like I'm home again. There's a familiarity in Flint. I know every street. I could never get lost in Flint. I could give directions to any place in the city, even now. So that's one feeling you get. But there are other times when you go through certain neighborhoods where you're left wondering, you know, you can't believe that this is the United States. This is the richest nation in the world, and we have let cities decay to this point. It's really staggering. I think people that come from the outside who haven't experienced these Rust Belt cities and these shrinking cities, when they go there for the first time, I think they're shocked that they're in the United States. I really think it's a terrible situation that we've let cities like this get to this point. So in some sense, I'm happy that I'm home and it still is home to me. And in another sense, I'm angry that we've somehow let this happen to my hometown and other towns like it around the country.
Clearly, you're very passionate about the situation in Flint. Did you ever feel like when you were writing the book that you were worried that you'd be somehow piling on since, you know, Flint has gotten some attention from, you know, authors like Ben Hamper, Michael Moore, the filmmaker? Were you worried that in writing this book, which, you know, sounds like it was really coming from a place of love, nonetheless, were you worried that it would cause people to just write the city off more?
Yeah, definitely, because people in Flint have suffered through not just the realities of what's happening there, but the reality of having the media write about the city. And a lot of the coverage is truthful, and a lot of it is well done, but a lot of it is quick-hit journalism where people just sort of drop in, or it's this internet-based slideshow journalism where Forbes does this constantly, where they list the most depressing cities, the most economically depressed cities,
right,
the most miserable cities.
The cities that you would just never want to go to, so we're going to show you pictures of them so you know you don't want to go to them.
Right. And I don't even consider that journalism. That's just laziness. That's just trying to get hits on a website. It doesn't serve any purpose, doesn't help anyone, doesn't really even inform anyone. And so I was very aware of that. And in some ways, I had kind of insider status. Four generations of my family lived in Flint. I had written about the city. I have a blog about the city. At the same time, I was fully aware that I don't live there now. And I have to be very careful about how I write about the city. And I have to convey that this is heartfelt and I care about the city. But as a journalist, I can't sugarcoat what's happening there. And I don't. One of the ways I achieved that was by relying really heavily on the stories and viewpoints of people who live in the city now. It's called Memoir of a Vanishing City. It's a memoir of my attempt to reconnect, but really it's a memoir of Flint, and it tells Flint's story. And so I think that was a good way to achieve a balance, which is truthful, yet isn't seen as just taking shots at the city, because the city suffered a lot of body blows, and the people that are living there have gone through a lot, and the last thing they need is some book-length kind of treatment, which just sort of kicks them while they're down and doesn't show some of the positive things happening in the city as well.
Well, and especially, I suppose, if you had moved from Flint to Cleveland or Cincinnati, but San Francisco, coming from San Francisco now,
right.
That kind of ups the ante a little bit, because I've noticed that Michigan people tend to be fairly suspicious, I think, of California. You know, it's like it's just another world or something out there.
Well, in many ways, it is a completely different world, and I think that's what makes one of the aspects of the book that makes it compelling is this juxtaposition of a guy from Flint who grew up in a, you know, single-parent household without a lot of money, and now I'm living in San Francisco and trying to reconnect with the city. And there's this thing about San Francisco where they say it's 49 square miles surrounded on all sides by reality, which in a lot of ways is pretty true. And I talk a lot about the house Tracy, my girlfriend and I, bought. It is 700 square feet. The housing inspector describes it as lightly constructed, which is kind of a nice way of saying it's pretty rickety. It feels like kind of a somewhat ramshackle cabin up north. And in 2004, we paid $550,000 for that, and everyone was telling us what a great deal we got. And it needed foundation work and roofing work and a lot of work. And when you juxtapose that with Flint, where you can literally buy houses by the dozen, like their jelly donuts at Don Donuts, where I used to go in Flint, for about $500 each, it really does seem like another world economically. And the things people worry about in San Francisco often seem so inconsequential to the things that people are going through in Flint. And I try to describe that juxtaposition in the book.
Why did you choose the word teardown for the title of this?
Well, I think one of the things that animates Flint right now is this shrinking city concept. And the book explores the kind of emotional issues that come with a city that at a certain point has to accept that they have a lot of vacant houses and a lot of buildings. And the reality is people aren't going to come back and move into those buildings anytime soon. And there's this juxtaposition between the logic of tearing down abandoned houses. And Flint has set up the land bank. That legislation came out of Flint that now affects the whole state, that allows county governments and land banks to seize these properties and tear them down when no one else wants them and keep them away from speculators. But that's a very logical approach. And I found the same emotional reluctance to embrace that that a lot of people in Flint found. It's really hard to go back and see a place that has all these memories, a specific house. You know it should probably come down. It's been abandoned for 10 years. It's burned out. But that was maybe your grandmother's house, or that's the house you grew up in. And so I felt like this tension between the logic of accepting that Flint's going to be a smaller, different place, and we need to get rid of a lot of these abandoned houses, versus the emotions of you don't want that to happen. You want Flint to be this great city that it was in the 50s and 60s. I thought that is really what animates Flint in a lot of ways. That is the core tension that a lot of people are going through right now. And so that prospect of tearing down part of the city to make it a better, different place, I thought it needed to be in the title some way, and that's where I came up with Tear Down.
Gordon Young is the author of Tear Down, Memoir of a Vanishing City. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Melissa. It was great to be here.
For Current State, I'm Melissa Benmark.